case, Lowe v. the United States. Mr. Kelly.
May it please the Court, my name is Chris Kelly and I represent Jody Lowe in this appeal from a judgment of conviction for possessing and distributing child pornography. The two issues that we have raised on appeal center on the search warrant that authorized a search of Mr. Lowe's residence as well as his tractor trailer. The first issue focuses on the affidavit in support of the warrant and asks whether it established probable cause in support of the warrant. And the second issue is whether there were materially false statements within the affidavit that should have been excised and whether, if that had happened, the remaining allegations created probable cause to support the warrant. So turning to the complete affidavit without excising anything, it's essentially our position that the affidavit describes a number of different images or pictures that were sent to Mr. Lowe.
Let me just cut to what I see as the bottom line. If we agree with you on all the other images, you know, how do you get away from that description of the photograph with the 8-year-old girl? Why wasn't that enough in itself, standing alone, to establish probable cause?
I don't think the photograph of the 8-year-old girl describes the kind of sexually explicit conduct or lewd conduct that is required to take a photograph out of the category of what Agent Becker was calling child erotica, which is legal. In other words, it's a picture of a naked child, but there's nothing illegal about
that. Yeah, but it was more than that. It was how she was positioned. It was where her hand was placed on a naked woman with her legs spread. I mean, I understand there's a distinction between just a nude child, but there was more than that here.
Well, his description in the affidavit is that she was positioned with her legs apart. Again, I don't know that that in itself is a description of lewd conduct. It is certainly a description of a naked child. And then, as I recall it, she has her hand in the crotch area of another woman.
Who's naked?
I'm sorry? Who is naked? Correct.
Right.
Again, we're not... The description that we've been given and the photograph itself doesn't appear in the warrant application, and there's no indication that the judge saw it, but the description of the photograph that is given does not describe any conduct. It describes the location of a hand, but it doesn't say that the hand is touching the genitalia of the other woman. It doesn't say that they're engaged in any lewd acts together. It's basically a girl with her hand in a woman's lap, and they're both naked. That, to me, is maybe borderline, but in and of itself, it is not a description of pornographic images. It may be a description of erotic imagery, which is legal to possess, but I don't think it goes over the edge and describes pornographic images because it isn't talking about lewd actions. It isn't talking about sexually explicit actions.
This isn't just pornographic. This is child pornography. Children.
I'm sorry?
This is about child pornography.
Child pornography, correct. Yeah. Yeah.
So just say that without saying pornography.
Well, I think there's a distinction between child pornography and what Agent Becker in his affidavit calls child erotica. A picture of a naked child might be erotica, but it's not pornographic because it's not illegal to possess a picture of a naked child. It only becomes pornographic when the image is lewd, when the image depicts sexually explicit conduct. There's a distinction between something that's not pornographic but still erotic and something that is pornographic and illegal because it's pornographic. And I don't think that the description that Agent Becker provided of this picture involving the 8-year-old girl crosses that line, at least as he describes it, from erotic and legal to pornographic and illegal.
And what else did he present?
The other descriptions that are in the affidavit that I think are clearly pornographic are problematic because Agent Becker has to estimate the age of the boys involved in those photographs and doesn't give us any foundation or any basis for that opinion. He says that there's a picture involving three boys who, in his words, look to be 13 to 16. And there's another picture of a boy that he describes as 12 to 15. There's certainly a big gap between 12 and 15. I think we're talking about entering adolescence to being a teenager. And certainly differences in how 12-year-olds look versus how 15-year-olds look. But there's nothing that tells us why Agent Becker is under the impression that this might be a 15-year-old as opposed to an 18-year-old. And that would be the distinction, obviously, between child pornography and adult pornography. He doesn't say that he has any expertise in estimating the age of children. He doesn't say, I gave this to a doctor, and a doctor was able to render an expert opinion that this is probably a child. He didn't show the picture to the judge or the magistrate who authorized this affidavit. And the problem with that is that by simply saying looks to be 12 to or 13 to 16 is that the magistrate who issues the warrant doesn't have the opportunity to exercise independent judgment, doesn't have the opportunity to say, well, I can see this, or I can at least, you know, consider an expert opinion and conclude from that opinion that these are probably teenage boys. That kind of information isn't before the magistrate, so the magistrate can't exercise independent judgment. He just has to defer to an opinion or an impression of an investigator who doesn't provide any foundation for that opinion.
Well, one of the things that he mentions is that only one of them has pubic hair, and another one doesn't have any hair under the arms or anything. So isn't that also something the magistrate can look at to help in terms of this age and to judge whether or not what the agent says is the age might be accurate?
I don't think so, and I, you know, hate to admit that I have viewed adult pornography, but I have, and I have seen what appear to be 40-year-old men who have no pubic hair and no chest hair because they shave it. That doesn't tell us anything about whether the people who are depicted in this picture are more than likely children rather than adults. That information just isn't there because he isn't giving us enough descriptive material, or more importantly, isn't giving us a medical opinion or an expert opinion that would establish a foundation to believe that, in fact, the pictures in the affidavit are pictures of children. The ideal way to do this would be to find a way to show the issuing magistrate the picture so that the magistrate can exercise independent judgment. Now, the government has suggested that maybe that can't be done anymore under the PROTECT Act because that would, you know, make the judge in possession of child pornography.
But, Ms. Kelly, how much more expertise would a judicial officer bring the observation of a photo than a law enforcement official? Aren't we talking about just a reasonable assessment by a competent adult as to what a photo depicts? I appreciate at the margins, certainly mistakes could be made, high end of teenage perhaps, or an incredibly young-looking adult, But aren't we really becoming a little unreasonable in our assessment to suggest that a law enforcement officer rather than a magistrate would lack the, quote, expertise? Isn't this just within the common knowledge of the average layperson?
Well, Your Honor, if we're talking about just bringing judgment to the question, then I think we get into the question of whose judgment should we be talking about? Shouldn't we be talking about the magistrate's judgment based on his independent assessment because he's looked at the picture, as opposed to simply deferring to the non-expert judgment of a law enforcement officer? And it seems to me that that shifts the determination of whether there's probable cause from a determination that the magistrate makes really to a determination that the law enforcement officer is making. And that's, I think, the problem.
In the real world, is it more likely that law enforcement officials regularly examining this type of material would bring even a greater expertise than the judicial officer who occasionally comes across a case?
They may, and in fact, I'm quite sure, do see the materials more often than a magistrate would, but I don't think that is a reason to defer to what is really a non-expert opinion. I think that if we're just talking about common sense, then it ought to be the magistrate's common sense and not the law enforcement officer's common sense that determines whether there's probable cause. And I see my time is up, so thank you.
We'll give you some time.
I'm sorry?
I'll give you a rebuttal time, Mr. Kelly.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Connell?
Good morning. My name is Paul Connell. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Western District of Wisconsin. I was responsible for the prosecution of Mr. Lowe in the district court. The defendants raised two issues, the first of which is whether the district court erred in finding that the search warrant was supported by probable cause. This court conducts de novo review. Here, there is no question that the search warrant was supported by probable cause. The affidavit describes in detail the transmission of images of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct and ties the transmission of those images to the defendant's address. In addition, Judge Williams...
And let's talk about these specific photos.
Right. In addition to the two that I've already you've talked about, and I'm sorry I did not, I wish I would have now attached a supplemental appendix to my brief, but the page 6 and 7, or 5, 6, and 7 of the search warrant affidavit lay out the images in addition to the ones you've talked about, and I'll turn to those in a moment. I just would note in the section entitled Summary of Facts Establishing Probable Cause, the second paragraph there talks about a series of images emailed October 17, 2005, and three images were attached to that email. These are the Anthony series. This is a known child victim, and it says there the Anthony image is a depiction of an 8 to 10-year-old male receiving oral sex from an adult male with a mustache. This image would meet the definition of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct. So in addition to the two you've already addressed with Mr. Kelly, you do have that, and I think that standing alone would have been enough for the issuing judge. But then we turn to a couple paragraphs later. On September 11, 2005, Mr. Monroe, who is in Seattle, sends Mr. Lowe four images. And I don't think there's any point for me to belabor what's described there, but what is described there...
That's paragraph 4.
That's correct.
I didn't want to go into all those details. I just raised the fact of this slight growth of pubic hair, which I thought was more information in terms of if you're looking at the age issue.
And it is, but it just says I'm one of the boys.
Right, I understand.
And turning, I guess, to some of the... Judge Flom, it's a probable cause standard. The law enforcement officer, I think, is going to have a much better sense of having, given the number of cases that are done now by FBI, by the Postal Inspection Service, by state law enforcement officers, they're going to have a much better sense of approximately how old, unfortunately, these children who are exploited are. I would also just add, the defendant, the images, we never attached these images. Now, this was a state search warrant, but I can tell you we never attached the images and give them to the magistrate judge to look at. We described them. We have the agent describe them in detail. However, the defendant had access.
And the reason for that, counsel?
Under the PROTECT Act now, our view is that they...
I just wanted to see if you were agreeing with counsel. That's my... view as well, but
that is our view. If the judge demanded them, we would probably, Your Honor, bring them, show them to the court, but we would not turn them over. But I just would add that the defendant did have access to the images via discovery. I'll turn to the Franks hearing in a moment, but he could have, if there really was a question, he could have shown them to Magistrate Crocker and crossed the affiant about this, and he chose not to. So unless there are questions about probable cause, then let me turn to the second issue in the case, which is whether the district court erred when it found that the errors in the search warrant were not material and that the search warrant affiant was not reckless when he failed to notice the errors and swore to the truth of the affidavit. This court reviews factual findings for clear error and legal determinations de novo. Here, out of an abundance of caution, the magistrate judge conducted a Franks hearing. And ultimately found that the search warrant affiant was credible, that is, Detective Becker was credible and not reckless when he just failed to notice the mistakes in the affidavit. Secondly, the district court found that the search warrant did not rest on any false information. This isn't the typical Franks case where the police have inserted made up facts and put them in, or omitted stuff that would vitiate against probable cause. And thirdly, the district court found that the purpose of the exclusionary rule was just not implicated in this case.
And I understand we had a Franks hearing, but Becker says he read it twice. And so, you know, it's hard to believe that he read it twice and just totally missed when you look at the number of paragraphs that talk about his partner's experience.
Two thoughts. First of all, I think we've all had situations where we're looking at something, and you just don't see it. Like when you're reading a sentence and the word "the" is there twice in a row, and you just miss it. But also, Special Agent Schultz testified, and he didn't notice it either, and he reviewed it before Detective Becker swore the truth of it. The assistant district attorney who recrafted the affidavit when the affiants were switched at the last minute, she missed it. And I can tell you that I missed it, and the intake person who does the intake in our office for these child porn cases, she missed it as well, that Detective Schultz, or that Special Agent Schultz, was named as the affiant and was the expert, but the Detective Becker was actually the affiant. It was just one of those weird things. It's a credibility determination. They testified. I don't have the record site, but there was a pretty lengthy hearing. Detective Becker and Special Agent Schultz were cross-examined at length by very good defense counsel, and he was basically unable to establish anything other than negligence on their part, and that's what the magistrate noted in his recommendation.
Right, and I think it was commendable that the magistrate did hold the Franks hearing, you know, in light of what was there. And this is just aside, but, you know, there are more and more cases coming to us from the state court and more affidavits from the state court. You know, I would hope that there would be some education or something, you know, because we're reviewing so many of these state search warrants and arrest warrants that have problems. And these problems would be eliminated. We wouldn't even be here. You know, if these were crafted under the same standard, you mentioned the FBI and the postal agents, and they're getting more and more familiar with the photos and that kind of thing. It seems to me there needs to be some serious education of this, particularly as more and more of these it's not just this kind of case, but gun cases, felons in possession, we're getting tons of these search warrants that have problems. And we typically don't see those problems when they're prepared by assistant U.S. attorneys.
And, Your Honor, what I would just tell you very briefly from our district is we do a fair amount of training. The magistrate even notes in his recommendation that this court is hoarse from yelling at the work they see from the northern counties in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It's kind of this, you know, I don't want to call it sloppy, but plainly search warrants with some problems come down, and we're continually having to rely on good faith. But we do some training. We've had a lot of training, especially in the drug context, and I'll certainly pass your comments on to the U.S. attorney.
Yeah, it needs to be a lot more.
unless there are other questions from the panel, then I would just rely on my argument here today and my brief and ask you to affirm the judgment and conviction.
Thank you. Mr. Kelly, you may have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it. With regard to the probable cause issue, the government relies upon the second paragraph under the heading Summary of Facts Establishing Probable Cause, which talks about an 8 to 10-year-old male. But as I read that paragraph, that has nothing to do with Jody Lowe. It talks about an individual named Mark Monroe, who's in Seattle and is kind of the start of this whole investigation. And it says that he received emails that included child pornography, and that he sent one of these emails to an email address, but it doesn't tie that email address to Jody Lowe. Jody Lowe's email address appears in paragraph 3, and in fact he says that he changed his email address, and neither of those would indicate that he was the recipient of the images that Mark Monroe sent out on October 17, 2005. So I just don't think that the second paragraph is relevant to this analysis at all. With regard to the Franks issue, boy, I would certainly agree that there are a lot of lousy search warrant affidavits coming out of the northern counties in Wisconsin, and I would certainly agree that the magistrate is frustrated with that in the Western District. But I think the important point here is that, Your Honor, you're correct that Mr. Becker did read this twice. He not only read it carefully twice. He noticed that he was missing some of the search authority that he wanted, and he went back and asked for it to be redrafted to give him more search authority. So I think clearly this isn't a case just of somebody being negligent. This is a case of somebody being reckless, because he doesn't see, as he's carefully reading it, that he is swearing that he searched for records that he did not search for that tied Mr. Lowe to this residence. And he's swearing that he conducted surveillance and saw a car there when, in fact, he didn't conduct surveillance on that date and did not see a car there that was registered to Mr. Lowe. So I don't think this is a case just of negligence. I think it is a recklessness case, and that's what brings us within the Franks
case. And I just want to clarify, I wasn't directing my remarks just to, you know, Wisconsin or northern Wisconsin. That was just a general observation in terms of all three states dealing with state law enforcement, just a general observation, so I don't want anyone to think I was calling them out in particular.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kelly, Mr. Connell. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.